Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we're working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as the 16th President Abraham Lincoln succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. Well, good evening, Abigail.
Good evening.
Great to be with you as we approach the Christmas season.
Yes.
And we have had just such a beautiful, beautiful fall here in Minnesota, and it seems hard to believe that we're only a couple weeks away from Christmas.
True, although I will quibble over the beautiful fall when I had to put my kids in snow pants for trick-or-treating.
So, that's true. Except with the exception of October 31st.
Yes.
Even a little snow that day. That's true. Well, we are excited to welcome a very wonderful guest who is not a new guest to our show. We've had her on multiple times, and I'll let you introduce our guest, Abigail.
We are so thankful that Catherine Kirsten, who is a writer, an attorney, and senior policy fellow and director at the Center for the American Experiment, is joining us this evening. And she is an expert on all things education and things going on here in the state of Minnesota. And Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us again today. We're grateful.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so interesting, Catherine, that we first started talking with you about the social studies standards probably over 2 years ago. And it has, this continues to be a drumbeat that we bring up because we want families to understand the significance of these ethnic or of these social studies standards and what's been added to them. And we've followed it as it's gone through draft one and then draft two and then before the administrative law judge. And then it's all got put on pause until the legislature could vote in a new ethnic studies requirement so that they could add in their strand. And
Right. You
wrote an article recently called Ethnic Studies, It's a Sneaky Way to Stoke Racial Division. I love that title because it is so apropos. Do you want to just share with our listeners more about this ethnic studies strand and just how it relates to the rest of the social studies standards?
Well, certainly. The idea behind that article was to explain that the idea of critical race theory has come to the attention of many families in the country over the last few years. And it doesn't have a good brand, let's say, critical race studies.
That's for sure.
Theory. And so that is one reason, I would say, that we're seeing a kind of a pivot to something called ethnic studies, which doesn't carry the same political baggage, at least yet, because people have never heard of it. And, you know, we are a proudly multicultural country, and we're very welcoming, open-minded, et cetera. So people tend to have a good feeling when they hear about ethnic studies, because it just sounds like learning about your neighbors and everybody belonging. And in fact, Center of the American Experiment did a poll on this last year and found that until people know what ethnic studies really is, they tend to approve it when they hear that it's going to be coming to their schools. So, of course, the idea is this is not the case at all. Our social studies standards have been in the works since November 2020, and the committee that the Department of Education chose to revise these social studies standards, which by law happens every 10 years, turns out to have been extremely heavily weighted toward ethnic studies activists. And what ethnic studies does, so this so-called strand, this whole new set of ethnic studies standards was added by this committee to the normal history, civics, economics, and geography standards that were encompassed in social studies. So what ethnic studies really is, at least liberated so-called ethnic studies, is critical race theory on steroids, because not only does it teach the usual race-based identities, tribal identities, and of course white privilege and white supremacy, but it really incites students to take action to disrupt and dismantle America's fundamental social institutions. So you'll get a sense of this looking at these ethnic studies standards that we now are in the process of adopting here in Minnesota. And one of the three is called resistance. So resist, what it means, what it's always meant to be an American in our fundamental institutions. Starting in kindergarten, by the way, every year, kindergarten through 12th grade, that's what's on our plate as parents for the future, for next year.
And as I think about this, Catherine, and we've had this conversation so many times, what is education? Education, especially at those young ages, should be focused in on reading, writing, and mathematics, right? We're talking about kindergarten age students here that are being taught to view their friends, their sweet friends that they wouldn't even notice race through. They're being taught to view their friends through the lens of race, which further incites division that would never have been there, for one thing. But then in addition to that, if they're being taught to take action and resist in kindergarten and first grade, first of all, how are they supposed to do that? They're in kindergarten. They're dependent on their parents at this point. But what it's doing is it's setting them up to be kind of angry, frustrated people. You know, you talked about how it leads to disrupt and dismantle. Well, when you start teaching kids as young as 6 years old to be resisting power structures, first of all, you know, how do you even teach that to a kindergartner? And how is a teacher supposed to do that?
I can tell you.
Well, yeah. And I think you should share with us some of the examples of how they are doing that. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You make such a good point, Rebecca. And so here I'm reading from the benchmarks, that is the actual content expectations that, you know, classroom teachers will be expected to fulfill going forward. So kindergartners have to, quote, retell a story about an unfair experience that conveys a power imbalance. How about that? First, so that's 5 years.
It could be your mom. It could be your mom. It could be the teacher.
It will be. But this is all about resisting authority. And so mom and teacher, they're absolutely fair game.
Yeah.
First graders, quote, listen to this. Identify examples of ethnicity, equality, liberation, and systems of power, and use those examples to construct meaning for those terms.
Oh,
that's
my
for
gosh.
Six-year-olds. These are supposed to construct meaning. I'm not making this up.
These kids should be learning phonics and how to read a book and their basic math facts, and then instead they're learning about identifying examples of ethnicity, equality, liberation, and systems of power.
Systems of power. But you make such a good point, Rebecca, because for this year, it's my understanding, for the first time, a minority of Minnesota students, that's all students, all grades across the state, can do grade level reading in math.
Right, right. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
They're not being
taught.
We're
going to do this.
We're going to do this instead of teaching the reading. And that's why I say there's not time for all of this. You can't do both. You have to do one or the other, or
exactly.
You're going to be so weighted in the one direction that you're not spending enough time on the reading, writing, and the math. And I just would like you to repeat that again for our listeners. We have covered this in a previous show this fall, but I think you should reiterate again what you just said about the math and the reading standards here in the state of Minnesota, which used to be, by the way, a... you know, beacon of excellence, right, across the nation, and now only how, what percentage?
Taking all kids in Minnesota, it is a minority, it's less than half now, who can meet grade level expectations in both reading and math.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So more than half of our kids cannot perform at grade level. And, you know, those are not particularly high standards.
Right.
But even with those, you know, relatively low standards, more than half of our kids cannot read or do math at grade level at every point.
And of course, the people that this affects the most are the students who are in inner city school systems where they're already not spending enough time on these things, and now they're replacing it with these types of, and they don't necessarily, you know, there are some students who are going to have great parents at home that are going to make sure their children learn how to read and do math, and frankly, they sort of end up having to be the teacher in some respects, but a child that doesn't have that benefit, they're at the mercy of whatever is being taught and whatever they're spending their time doing at school.
Exactly. So with Black and Hispanic students, this is now from memory, but in terms of 11th grade math proficiency, it's something like 14% of Black 11th graders and 16% of Hispanic 11th graders who are proficient in math.
Oh my goodness, that's appalling. That is,
so appalling.
It is a crime, and I really see education as the most important right of a child to receive in this country. And when you look at this whole CRT-based social studies set of standards and how it's infiltrated other subjects as well, we have to ask ourselves, what are we really trying to do to help these kids? Because instead of actually giving them a real education, we're saying to them, well, you're victims, and so therefore you can't ever rise above. And, you know, they accuse the country of systemic racism, and yet there's nothing more systemically racist than holding children down and not allowing them to rise and have high standards for them. And I that is the thing that just appalls me the most. It's the opposite. They have the opposite effect of what they supposedly are trying to do. Oh, my goodness.
You hit the nail on the head. That's right.
You know, one of the examples, you know, you were giving examples for kindergartners and first graders. But then I would love for you to share this fourth grade example and the high school example as well, if you have that right in front of you.
That's geography.
Yeah.
We have literally in geography pulled out all the fact-based content. I mean, the most fundamental geographical knowledge that you need, like, what are the Rocky Mountains? You know, where is the Pacific Ocean? That has all been removed. If you look at our current standards, which were, you know, drafted in 2011, they are full of those kinds of examples. You can't understand, you know, let's say the war in Ukraine if you have no idea where Europe
it is.
No. Let's not go too far, though. They absolutely will be able to, because they've been taught since kindergarten that they know better. And all they have to, they don't actually have to know something, but they can shout about
it. Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly. So in terms of the fourth grade benchmark, I've said instead of, you know, learning the names and locations of the seven continents and, you know, the Amazon River, they will, quote, describe places and regions explaining how they are influenced by, wait for it, power structures.
Unbelievable.
And when they study states and capitals, they must include, quote, a recognition of indigenous land these places were built on. So you may not know your states and capitals, but you will know, you know, supposedly what tribe supposedly lived on the, you know, the place where the state capital now is.
Unbelievable.
Very valuable, important information for your future career.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I know we're going to cover this more in the next show, but when you read that again, you know, describe places and regions explaining how they are influenced by power structures, it's no surprise then that we have students all across America, you know, marching in support of Palestine, which there was never,
was never
real Palestine anyway, but
they probably
don't know that because they've never been taught that.
And,
but they have been taught that Israel is a power structure, you know, never mind the Hamas or Hezbollah that are, you know, wanting to just destroy Israel.
Exactly.
But anyway, so we're going to talk about that more in the next show. And then finally, the high school, there's so many examples. These are just a few, by the way, for our listeners. I encourage you to go on to the Minnesota Department of Education website and read the most recent set of standards, which I believe it was at draft 3 that came out just over a year ago now. Is that right? Or
well, it was draft 3, but the commissioner has tweaked draft 3. And I think to make it a bit more palatable, but of course, you know, they will do exactly what they want to, and exactly what they said in drafts one and two, that's what they plan to do. They've just in a few cases tweaked the language to sort of try to avert some of the
the worst of the pushback. And to your point, Catherine, you brought this up early in the show, that the committee that actually did the review was heavily weighted towards individuals who believe very strongly that we need this type of education in our nation's schools and, of course, in our state schools. And I believe that they even hired a consultant that ran that committee. And she was trained in Marxism, if I remember correctly. I did a little research on her. And she had a very strong, she's a consultant and had a very strong bent in that direction. So,
well, of course,
the leader of the whole group was pushing in that direction.
Well, what you're referring to is a group here called Education for Liberation Minnesota. It is a state chapter of the National Education for Liberation group. And this is truly a radical they call themselves, they want to be a political force in Minnesota, which they certainly are. But they literally want to see political upheaval here. So on their own website, first of all, I should say they kind of created this group called the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition. Mm-hmm. It is that group dominated the committee that wrote these standards. So on the EdLib Minnesota website, they actually say, quote, the decision was made to pack the Social Studies Standards Revision Committee, and they say that their members, quote, authored the ethnic studies standards.
Unbelievable. I mean, that they're
our
so blatant.
Needs to be held accountable for this. These people do not represent the average Minnesotan in any way, and they have been allowed to determine what is going to be taught in our K-12 schools going forward.
Well, and talk about not following procedure. You know, I know you brought that up in your testimony, Catherine, and I'm glad you did. I don't know if the testimony was live or if it was over Zoom, but I would hope that the judge had to have taken note of that comment that you made, because that is not the proper procedure, and that is not at all the intention of the review committee. It is supposed to be representative, and if they're claiming that they wrote them and authored them themselves, that is such a bold statement for them to make. Another topic that I think is important for our listeners to understand, you know, we're talking about power structures and things like that, but this ethnic studies standard also talks about the justice system and the police departments. and yes, now, weakening that link, right?
Well, yes, they removed at the last minute, basically, as I recall, specific references to the police, which were in the last two drafts, but they kept in the language about the criminal justice system. So,
okay.
Yes,
okay.
The idea is to portray the criminal justice system as I believe it's under the resistance standards, studied in terms of systemic and coordinated exercises of power. So the criminal justice system is illegitimate.
And systemically racist is what they're saying.
Right, right. And what Idlib, Minnesota, which again will be basically will have tremendous influence over how these standards are taught going forward, because the legislation passed in spring of 2023 created a permanent working group for ethnic studies at the Department of Education. And the law literally says its members will be named, quote, with input from the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition.
Group, yep. They got written into the legislation?
Yeah, and they got money, too. And so they will be designing a new ethnic studies framework. They will be selecting curricular resources to recommend to schools, teacher training, I'm sure consultants, because so many school districts will not have a clue what to do with these standards. And so they're very likely to be told, hey, we got this great consultant. Don't worry. You know, this person will come in. And, well, we know
of
those people are. And we know partly because of what's happened in St. Paul.
Yeah.
Where they adopted a requirement for an ethnic studies course in 2021, a quote, critical, know that word, a critical ethnic studies course. We know who some of their consultants were. And it is as radical as you can imagine in terms of, quote, transformative resistance, abolish prison. They have a sign in what they call their seeds of resistance sort of graphic where people are holding protest signs, and one of them says abolish prison. Another one says no walls, no bars, no walls, no bans, no walls. So all these kids are going to be learning that this is what's expected, you know, a tribalized racial identity, first of all, and then you must stand up and transformatively resist the country where you live. Who knows what you're supposed to be working for, but, you know, just kind of destroy what's around you, and then we'll figure out what the proper course forward is.
Which is why so often when you see demonstrators getting interviewed, they often can't answer why they're out there. There's very few of them that really know why they're out there. They just know they're supposed to be out there resisting.
And that's
all across the nation. And, you know, again, I go back to if they claim they're trying to stem systemic racism, they're actually creating systemic racism, because if they don't believe in prisons and they don't believe in policing, they don't believe in youth having to be part of the juvenile justice system, what happens then is that the victims are no longer protected and the criminals are never given any consequence. And the younger the kids are, the sooner you can reach them and help them understand what socially healthy behavior is, and you can protect them from the long-term prison system. Let them off the hook in these young ages, saying that you're helping them, you're actually causing more harm, and these kids are more likely to end up in the prison system. You know, you're actually adding to the prison to pipeline or the school to pipeline, sorry, school to prison pipeline, rather than actually helping the school to prison pipeline.
All of that is correct.
It's just mind-boggling to me. It's just really, really sad. Abigail, I know that you are an attorney and you are a mom of four children and they're young. And what are you thinking as you are participating in this conversation. I mean, your kids are at a great school, but you used to work at the Capitol in education. I mean, does it shock you how things have changed since you were there?
You know, I actually have thought about that quite a bit, because it has been, I have not been there for at least 13 years now. So it's, no, excuse me, that may 10, but I started about 13 years ago. And, you know, I do feel like the beginning of my time there was probably that tail end of civility in politics, where I honestly, I remember having the best time joking around with politicians who were not on my side of the aisle. We had just the best time. You know, good at collegial relationship. You know, we would exchange friendly barbs and, you know, everybody's smiling and laughing. And I truly, I remember sitting around, I remember sitting around the conference table once. And so that's, you know, when you have committee hearings, you're all kind of in this, usually in a U shape. So you can see a wide variety of people around the table. And I remember thinking, I strongly disagree with what this, you know, representative is saying. And it was someone on the other side of the aisle. But I absolutely believe that this person wants what is best for kids. I never doubted that. I strongly, you know, disagreed with their methods, with their methodologies, or that their methodologies would reach their stated desired goals. You know, I'd fight about that all day long. But but I never doubted that they absolutely, and I am reasonably confident that they would have said the same about, you know, people on the other side of the aisle, that, hey, we disagree on how to get there, but we agree on what the goal is for children. And I don't think that people would say that anymore. That's really been shaken. Seeing what representatives, how they, you know, the legislation that they vote for, the way that they are speaking to one another. And I think a lot of Minnesotans are longing for civility, and not that passive aggressive Minnesota civility where we just pretend these issues don't exist. Not that. I think they are longing for, hey, could we talk about the real issues and not attack one another's character and not, you know, exchange these snide barbs, which is what all of this curriculum teaches people to do. It teaches them. All I could think of, Catherine, was, oh my gosh, it's just going to raise up more Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes. People who will, you know, spout off on TikTok, but are saying nothing factual of substance, and it's just pure ad hominem attacks, and it's just this constant stream of noise.
Well, you make such a good point there, and remind me of I think something that is somewhat new, and that is literally calculated deception and lack of transparency on the part of people pushing this. And so at Center of the American Experiment, we actually had a campaign called Bait and Switch.
Oh, that was so good. Yes, we got to talk about that. But Catherine, we are just about out of time. I'm so sorry. The music is about to cut you off. Listeners, please go back and listen to our last episode with Catherine Kirsten, because we did talk about that bait and switch, and it was excellent. It was so good. Everyone, we hope that you really enjoyed this episode. You can listen to it anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, can go to our website, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you so much, Catherine, for meeting with us this evening.
Great to be with you.
And listen to us again next week when we have Catherine back to continue this conversation and to tie in also to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Have a great night. Thank you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.